Om Shanti. Did any of you wonder what the three accounts are? Do any of you know what the three accounts of Brahmins are? Because that's what our topic is today. The three accounts of Brahmins. Did anybody think about it? What do you think the three accounts are? Baba gives the confluence sage many different titles. But one time Baba had said, the confluence sage is a bank. He had given the confluence sage this title, it is a bank. And Baba had said that there are three accounts. You know, like even... And a bank only has fixed opening and closing times, like the bank here has fixed times, right? So this bank is such that it only opens at the confluence age. And if you make an investment in this bank, you get a very, very, very high rate of return. And there had been one particular Murli, 2008 in Om Shanti Bhavan, in which Baba had said, the three accounts of Brahmins are the account of your own efforts. You accumulate an income for the entire cycle through your three accounts. Your first account is the account of your own personal efforts. The second account is the account of blessings. When we serve in a very specific way and people give us blessings from their hearts, that is actually an accumulation for us as well. And the third account for Brahmins is the account of charitable acts. Often we would hear Baba say, for the account of charity, often we would hear this song in the Sakar Murlis, hey soul, look at your face in the mirror and see how much sin and how much charity you've performed. And in English there are two words that are very similar. One word is charity and another word is donation. And there's actually a big difference between the two, even though you might, it kind of feels like it's the same thing. Charity and donation. Anybody want to take a guess at what is the difference between charity and donation? Nobody want to take a guess? One is direct and one is not direct. Okay, that's a good answer. Anybody else? Difference between charity and donation. Charity is subtle and donation can be physical. Actually, once Daddy Janki had given a very, very clear definition of charity and donation, the difference. Donation is when I give according to my capacity. So, for example, if I have $100 and I can easily afford to give $20 to Baba's box, and still be left with plenty for myself. So yes, it's an act of donation. Yes, it's an act of giving. But I didn't... I haven't put myself out. Whereas an act of charity... An act of charity is something where... Even if I have to go without... I'm willing to give what's needed to be given. an act of charity is very, very elevated. And the more acts of charity that we perform, actually, it helps us move forward in our Brahmin life. Because when we come to Baba, we come to Baba with all the wrong actions, the burden of all the wrong actions that we have performed. And burden is something that determines my speed of effort. Have you ever wondered why sometimes you have really, really good thoughts for your effort? You really want to change something in yourself. And you're able to maybe do it for a few days and then your interest fizzles out. Has it ever happened to you? Or only to me? Has it happened? And do you ever wonder why it is that your thoughts are so good, your thoughts are so elevated, but you somehow can't get your thoughts to transform into action? One of the reasons why we're not able to transform our elevated, pure, powerful thoughts into action is because of the burden of our past actions. You know, for example, if you have a big rucksack on your back and you need to catch the bus, which is half a mile away, and you have a few minutes, it's going to be more difficult for you to catch that bus and run to catch that bus than if you had no luggage, right? If you were light, you had no burden, no baggages, no packages, then you would be able to run faster. Your speed would be there. And so the speed with which I can translate my intentions, my good thoughts for myself into action, practical action and a reality, one of the factors that influences it is my past actions. And Baba has told us that the confluence age is also an opportunity for every wrong act I've performed, every wrong action. Now let me perform charitable actions, not average actions, but charitable actions, actions where I really have to give of myself. You know, and the difference between average and elevated is something that is important to understand. In Brahmin life, we can make a lot of average efforts. But if you want to experience the joy of Brahmin life, you need to make elevated efforts. And elevated efforts don't have to be grand. They can be small elevated efforts. They can be realistic efforts. But let them be elevated and not average. You know, for example, I remember one time Baba had said that sometimes when the children check their chart, they become very happy. And they say that, today I didn't give anybody any sorrow. And Baba says, it's great that you didn't give anybody any sorrow. But then Baba wants to ask you the question, how many did you give happiness to? And so not to give sorrow is an average effort. But to give happiness is an elevated effort. Can you see the difference? And so the difference between donation and charity. If I, for example, you know, there's a story I was reading recent. I read a story, you know how on the internet all these stories come around. And there was a story about how there was once a prince, and a very beautiful prince, a very smart prince, and every girl in the kingdom wanted to get married to him, obviously. And so when the time for his marriage came, there was the queen announced that anybody could come that the son's hand was up for marriage, but there would be a competition to decide who would get the prince's hand. And the competition was like a marathon, you know, and it was a 3-day race with many different physical fitness things on the way. And there was one particular girl who deeply, deeply loved the prince. She'd always loved the prince and she'd always secretly wanted to marry him. And so she trained and she trained and she made effort for months for this competition. And then when the time of the competition came, everybody started and she also started and she joined in the race. And day one, she was really ahead, quite far ahead. And day two, she was still quite far ahead. And day three, just when there was like half a day left for the competition to end, she was on her way and she noticed on the roadside a very elderly lady who had just sat down on the floor on the road. And so the young girl, she approached this lady and she said to the lady, why are you sitting here like this? Is everything okay? And the lady said, I've been on a very long journey and I have one more day's travel to get back to my village, but I'm so old and I'm so tired, I don't think I can make it. I don't think I can make it on my own, I need somebody to help me. Otherwise I will just sit here and I'm sure that I will die if I just sit here because I'm very old and I'm very frail. And she looked at the girl and she looked into her eyes and she said, will you help me? Now the girl knew that if she says yes to her, the months and months of training that she had put in, the effort she had put in to, and she was ahead of the race, she had a chance of winning the prince's hand, and she had set her heart on the prince for years. Everything was at stake. So what do you think she did? She decided that she had to help that old lady because how could she leave her there? How could she abandon her? So she helped the old lady and she took her back to her village and of course she arrived last in the race. But she was very good-natured, so when all the contestants got together to see, and the prizes were going to, and the, you know, the ceremony for the who the prince's hand would go to was going to be announced. And she was sitting there in the crowd thinking, never mind, you know, whoever won the prince's hand, they probably deserved to win the prince's hand, and that's just the way life is. So she had this very matter-of-fact approach. She was just standing there to congratulate whoever the winner was. And the queen came, and the queen walked down the aisle where all the contestants were on either side. And to her surprise, the queen walked straight up to her. And the queen stopped in front of her. And when she looked at the queen's face, for a moment she thought, why is she stopping in front of me? And then when she looked at the face of the queen, guess who it was? It was the old lady. And part of the competition, the queen had made that, she had disguised herself. And she had made that part of the competition because she also wanted to test the character of the person to whom her son, the prince, would be married. And so that girl made that sacrifice. So it proved the bigness of her heart. It proved her character. It proved that for her, compassion, for her helping a person at the time of need was more important than her own aspirations, her own ambitions, her own needs. And it didn't matter that she had to make such a big sacrifice to get, she had to forego that. And you see, that is an act of charity. An act of charity is where you have to really give something up. Or you have to really pull yourself out of yourself. And we can all assess for ourselves. There are little acts of charity that on a day-to-day basis we have the opportunity to do. That was a big thing, okay? But small things. How many times is it that you're working on a deadline for something and somebody walks in and they say, oh, could you help me for a minute? And you say, no, I'm sorry, I've got too much. I've got to get this thing done. But we don't even spare 1 minute. 1 minute that could make their life a lot easier. And you know, it's very easy to theorize about knowledge. It's very easy when you're sitting in classes, it's very easy when we're sitting in Madhuban to, you know, be touched by things. But actually the real measure of our character is when we are in situations. Many years ago, every year for many years I've helped with the seating for Bab Dada. And it's a very interesting exercise to do the seating for Bab Dada, because you see people really want to sit near the front. And sometimes the most amazing sanskars will emerge if people can't get a seat near the front. And I remember on one particular occasion, there was one soul who had not made it to Madhuban because of their local circumstances. They had not been able to come to Madhuban for something like 20 years. It was a pretty amazing story. They had actually been kidnapped and forcibly married and kind of held almost like a domestic slave. And after 20 years, they had managed to free themselves from this karmic situation, and they had made it to Madhuban. And I know the effort that this soul had made to get there. And she'd missed Baba in those 20 years, she'd missed seeing Baba and Om Shanti Baba. And it was Shantivan days then already. And so, I remember that there was on the sofas, I had asked Shashi Ben, you know, this soul has really had this amazing story, and would it be possible for us to fit her into the sofas? And Shashi Ben said to me, you just go and check that if there's a sofa where there's three people sitting and they don't mind squeezing together and putting a fourth person in, then go right ahead. So I went and I looked at all the sofas and I looked at all the people sitting on the sofas, and for several of them I thought, no, I can't ask them. I just didn't feel comfortable to ask them. And then there was one particular brother, very, very good-hearted brother, always willing to help you whenever you need a hand. And so I approached him and I said, do you mind like squeezing up for this sister so that she could sit? And he turned around and he said to me, no way. This is my seat and I'm sitting here and I'm going to sit here comfortably. And I was really taken back by that. And so I said, took a deep breath and I said, okay, no problem. And I asked another person and another person and another person. And every single person said no to me. Every single person said no. And then there was one particular individual, and they had been given the opportunity to sit on the sofa for the very first time. And it would probably be the only time they would be offered an opportunity. And I didn't want to ask them because I knew it was their only, you know, it was an odd occasion for them to be sitting there. And that chance probably wouldn't come to them again. But anyway, I asked them. And they turned around and they said to me, "Sister, why to squeeze her? I can go and sit at the back, it's no problem, let her take my seat." And I was so deeply touched by that. And actually, at that moment in time, so many blessings emerged from my heart for that person. And all the other people who I had asked, they're people who sit on the sofa all the time. They're people who sit at the front all the time. So it's not like if they gave up or they squashed up for one occasion, it would be a big deal. And the person who had really, really, it had been a little bit of a shock for me at the time, was the person who was always so helpful when they were off the field. The others, it's okay. But this particular individual, the first one who I approached, who is always so helpful. And so for me, that was also very insightful. That whole episode was very insightful. That sometimes, even the most seemingly good people, in a moment of trial, really, what is your response? And okay, I'm giving that as an example, but I ask myself that. You know, it's really in your moment of trial that you know. You really know yourself. And this is why, actually, to perform acts of charity, one very essential ingredient is that you have to come into the gathering. You can't make elevated efforts sitting on your own in some solitude or some corner. You have to make the effort to come into the gathering, because only when you are in action and interaction do you really get to see who you are and what you are. And okay, no problem. In a situation, if you see that your heart is not so big, that's not even a problem. Because Baba says to us two things. He says check and he says change. So I have an opportunity. If I can see my heart is not so big, I mustn't give myself a hard time. One of the lessons that it's taken me long time to realize, and in fact I don't think I've even realized it fully as yet, but I've started to realize it, is that in Brahmin life, it's good to be sincere, but not serious. If we take our efforts, and we take ourselves, and we take our shortcomings too seriously, then also we become heavy and we become hard with ourselves. And we become intense in the wrong way. And if I'm like that with myself, then obviously I'm going to be like that with others. And nothing I ever do is ever going to be good enough for me. And so be sincere. And part of sincerity is checking and changing. Okay, I see something that's not quite right about myself. Actually, I have to be very, very honest with myself in that moment in time and say, okay, so I am self-centered. Okay, so I don't want to make sacrifices for others. But that's how I am right now, and I have to deeply accept. I have to not go into a space of denial or excuse making or covering up or anything, but I have to have a few seconds. And really, checking doesn't take more than a few seconds. Sometimes people say, oh, I need time to look at myself and to see myself, but actually, real checking only takes a few seconds because you will feel inside. So you just take a few seconds. Okay, this is what I'm seeing about myself. And I need to do something about this. And okay, I am going to do something about this. And you have to make a decision. What I found with myself is that often I will check and then I go into panic or alarm mode. Or I become heavy or I become critical of myself. And I never actually complete the third aspect, which is just make a quiet, gentle decision that you're going to do something about it. And if you are genuine about wanting to change, then drama will send you the same situation or a similar situation again to exercise that part of you that needs to be changed. Drama will always create that situation. One of the other aspects of charitable acts, one is this big thing of selflessness, but also in terms of charitable acts, never to give up on anyone, or never to give up on yourself even. Sometimes people can be consistently have bad behavior in their interactions towards us. Or you can see zero signs of them wanting to change, zero signs of them wanting to compromise or to realize or change themselves. And sometimes what we say is, what we do is we exercise a false sense of detachment. Even within virtues, there are two ways of practicing virtues. You can exercise virtues truthfully, or you can exercise virtues falsely. You can have false compassion, you can have true compassion. You can have false big-heartedness and you can have true big-heartedness. You can have false forgiveness and you can have true forgiveness. And when it comes to people not changing, it can be very tiring if you're in a relationship where someone is consistently not budging from their bad behavior. And often in those situations, we feel compelled to say, okay, the best thing for me is to just step away from this person. Because every time I'm with this person or near this person, it's too much aggravation for me. And so we exercise false detachment. But actually, if there's authenticity in my efforts, I won't step away from anybody, no matter what. I will carry on interacting. And one day, because I have remained consistent, because I have remained loyal, that person will change. Sometimes it takes a long time. But you know, they say that, I didn't know this, I learned this recently. Coconut trees, when you plant a seed for a coconut tree, sometimes it won't grow for years. It takes years sometimes for a coconut tree to grow. But once it starts growing, the coconuts come all here. And after that, they keep coming. And so certain karmas are like that as well. Certain good karmas are like that. That sometimes you have to just keep at it. And you have to see no result. But if you have faith, if you have loyalty, if you just keep going, then when the fruit comes, it really comes. And fruit of our karma is such that doctors would tell us that fruit gives you strength. Now, the sign of a very good charitable karma is that that karma will not only give you fruit, it will give you fruit, but it will give others strength. In Hindi, the two words rhyme. Fruit is phal, and strength or power is bal. So the sign of an elevated karma is that you experience the phal, the fruit, and others experience the bal. Because when a farmer grows his fruit, he doesn't just grow it for himself, right? It's for the whole community. How many people take benefit from that fruit? So with any good karma also, it's not just me who benefits, it's others who benefit. And I tell you a very interesting statement Daddy made. I think it must have been, 15 years ago or so, that there was a very, very big earthquake in Bhuj, Gujarat. Anybody remember that? Very big earthquake in Bhuj, Gujarat. And it was on a scale that India hadn't experienced for a long time, and quite devastating. And I remember that Daddy Janki was in Oxford at the time, and people were wanting to know, what is the Brahma Kumari's response to this? And there had been somebody who was, I suppose you could say, of a cynical nature, who had challenged Daddy, and they had said to Daddy, well, you know, you Brahma Kumaris, you talk about all this spiritual stuff, but when it comes to practically helping people, what do you actually do? Now, according to drama, in Bhuj, the Gujarat family had really got together, and they had really given a lot of physical aid as well. But what I found interesting was Daddy's response. She said, actually, there are many people who will give physical aid in a situation like this. Even other countries will come and help at a time like that, when there's a natural calamity. But has anyone ever thought about why the situation arose in the first place? What was the spiritual reason behind it, and what is our spiritual response? And she explained how, she said, we use the expression Mother Earth. And we say that the earth is our mother, and as human beings, each one of us walks on this earth. Some thump, some move with grace and gentleness, some jump around, but everybody moves on Mother Earth, and every move we as a human being make, the earth feels the weight of it. The earth feels that movement. And in Hindi there is an expression that every person has a gatri. Gatri is like I don't know what the English word is. It's like a, you know how you put your clothes, you wrap your clothes, in the old days you would wrap your clothes or your belongings not in a bag or a suitcase, but in a sheet, and you would tie a knot on it. And you would have it at the end of a stick, and you would put the stick over your back. You know? Do you remember? I don't know what it is in English, what the word is in English. I can't hear you. Bando. Is that what it's called? Anyway, so you know what I mean, right? This stick with this thing. And they have this expression in Hindi where they say that every good act, every bad act you perform goes into the bundle. So the more bad acts you perform, the heavier your bundle becomes. And if you are walking on Mother Earth with a heavy bundle, then the weight that you exert on Mother Earth is more, it's heavy. And Daddy said, when there is an earthquake, it's because Mother Earth is saying, I can't bear your weight anymore. I cannot bear the weight of your misdeeds anymore. And so, if someone is going to give a truly spiritual response to a situation like an earthquake, then actually, at a deeper level, what they need to ask themselves is, let me stop performing actions that are based on sin. Let me start performing actions that are based on virtue. So that the weight and the burden becomes lightened. And so even that is something that we need to consider. How can I lighten my burden and the burden of others? And you know, one thing I have begun to understand, is that actually nobody is bad. No matter how wrong someone's behavior looks, nobody is bad, really. Actually, every person is innately good at heart. But sometimes it's so hard to see that. But I have to believe that. I have to believe that every person is good. And I have to not give up on anybody. And actually, the return karma of me not giving up on anybody is that nobody will give up on me. And that I myself will not give up on myself. If I give up on myself, then they always say, whatever you can't do for yourself, do it for others. And it's easy to believe in people who are good, it's easy to believe in people who are nice, it's easy to support those people, it's easy to give cooperation to those people. But actually, it's a great act of charity to believe in somebody who nobody believes in. It's a great act of charity to support people who nobody is willing to support. To support people who will criticize you, who will insult you. So those are just a few of the thoughts about how, you know, we can become a charitable soul. And increase our account of charity. But what about my account of self-effort? In terms of my own personal effort, what I would say is that for that account to be healthy, it's very important to be consistent. My account of effort, if I want to accumulate in my account of personal efforts, be consistent. Even if there's something small that you do in terms of your effort, be consistent in it. One of the things Baba tells us is never miss the Murli. And this thing of never missing anything is part of consistency. Whether you feel like going, or whether you don't feel like going to the class, or being in a class, or being in yoga, go anyway. Be disciplined to go anyway. Years ago, I remember there was this one sister, very good effort maker, but let's say there was some kind of obstacle or whatever, but she had this habit. She would be the first one to arrive for meditation before class. 6 o'clock, she would be there for meditation. And during 6 to 6.30, the meditation time before Murli, she would be very alert. She'd have meditation. And then every single day for years, as soon as sweet children were said in the Murli, she would fall asleep. And as soon as the last Om Shanti would be said, she'd wake up. It was like a clock. As soon as sweet children were said, and as soon as the last Om Shanti, she would be up. So one day she asked one of the seniors, she said, Baba says that if you sleep in the Murli class, you create a vibration of sleepiness, and that vibration disturbs others and it makes them sleepy. So is it a bad karma for me to be in class and to come to class? And she said, I've tried all sorts of things, but nothing works. I can't keep away. A very interesting answer she was given. That even that is an account from the past that is preventing you from taking benefit today. But if you keep coming enough days, one day that account will finish. That's the power of consistency. That you just keep going, keep going, keep going, one step, one step, one step, one step. It's like, you know, some countries, like in Europe especially, I don't really know much about the rest of the world, but many countries are on the border with another country. So for example, France and Italy, they share a border. Now imagine if you were doing a journey, you were walking on a long journey, you were on a hike. If you keep walking, keep walking, keep walking, keep walking, every day keep walking one step further, one step further, one day your one step will take you across the border. So one day, one minute you're in France, the next minute you're in Italy. Just one step, you cross over the line. And you arrive in a different territory. And sometimes with our efforts, it's the same thing as well. That if you keep going, you keep going, you keep going, one day you will arrive in a different territory. You will arrive in a different state of consciousness. You will have moved to another level. But to get there, you mustn't stop. You have to keep going. And there's another beautiful thing about consistency. Two practical examples. I remember Daddy once saying how many years ago, she was on her, before she came to the West, she was in India still, Daddy Janki. And she was on this long bus journey from one center to another center. And it was an overnight bus, and in the middle of the night, the bus broke down. So, and they didn't look like it was going to be repaired quickly. So Daddy decided to go to the center in the place where the bus had broken down. And obviously the people at that center didn't know Daddy was coming. It was a surprise. She arrived in the middle of the night, and obviously she would take class the next day. And that particular day, the number one student of the class who had never, ever, ever missed class, ever, who was always there every single day in the same seat at the same time, she was not there that day for the first time ever. She arrived late to class. And afterwards, she cried and cried and cried, and she told what had happened to her and why she was late for class for the first time ever. And what had happened is that for the first time, she had had a huge attack of Maya, whereby for the first time, she started having thoughts like, oh, you go to class every day. Why do you need to go to class? You're feeling tired today. You should rest. No point in going to class when you're feeling tired, because anyway, you'll just go there and sleep. So she had had this attack of Maya. And in the struggle of her mind of whether to listen, whether not to listen, because the mind's really clever at making things look like they're sensible when they're not sensible or beneficial, she lost some time, and that's why she was late for class. And when she arrived in class and she saw Dadi, she said to her, that's why she wept, because she thought, look, if I had missed class today, this one-off chance, this unexpected lottery of Dadi, I would have missed it. And so again, another argument, another case for consistency. And another example. Some years ago, it must have been some years ago because Ali Kumarka was around. It was Shivratri. And you know what happens in Madhuban in Shivratri, right? What happens? Hundreds and hundreds, I'm exaggerating, flag hoisting ceremonies. And they're all identical. We all get together. We all play the same song. We all stand. And the same people take the mic and the same people give a speech, and they give exactly the same speech every year. And I remember one particular year. And there had been one after the other, as usual, Shivratri flag hoisting. And I had been to most of them. Actually, all of them. And then there was going to be one more. And I remember thinking to myself, oh God, I can't take another Shivratri flag hoisting ceremony. Anyway, they're all the same. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to go. And this flag hoisting was going to be in Shiv, in Om Shanti Bhavan. And I was in my room in the training section, and I thought, no, I'm just going to sit here and read. It's a better use of my time to study one of Baba's mudras, and go for some meditation, because, you know, repetition. And then something inside me kept feeling uncomfortable. And I kept saying to myself, no, you know, it's a sign of our respect for Baba. It's a sign of our respect for Almighty Shiv Baba and what Baba is doing for us and this yajna. I need to go and I need to be present. And then I kept thinking, oh no, you've given enough respect in the last 5 days. But eventually I went. And what happened was something that was historical. They were just about to, they had just hoisted the flag, and Dadi Kumarka turns around to Dadi Gulzar, and in Om Shanti Bhavan it's in that little garden that they do it, just on the way down the steps. And Dadi Kumarka turns around to Dadi Gulzar, and she says to her, go get a message from Baba. And Dadi Gulzar turns around and she says to her, what? Here, now? You mean whilst I'm standing? And Dadi Kumarka goes to her, yeah, now. And normally when Dadi Gulzar goes to get a message from Baba, it's quite ceremonial. Either it's first thing in the morning at Amrit Vela, she goes to Baba, or it's in the gathering when bhog has been offered to Baba, and it's you know, quite traditional, quite ceremonial. And she said to Daddy, but I go in the morning, or I go when I can't go because Baba has to pull my string. I can't decide to go. It has to be Baba that decides. And she, I mean, it looked like she didn't want to go, and there was some hesitation or discomfort. And then because of her respect and her love for Daddy, she said, okay, I can try. So like this, the brothers ran. One brother fetched a bhog table, another brother fetched the bhog table cover, another brother ran and picked some fruits to offer to Baba, because you got everybody standing there. You can't make bhog. So they went and picked some fresh fruits from a tree, washed them, and within 10 minutes, or less than 10 minutes, the bhog set up, the bhog music, everything. Everybody stood and offered bhog, except for the daddies, they sat. And you know what? Baba pulled her string and she brought back a message from Baba. And Baba said, and I remember to this day that Baba said that under these circumstances, normally Baba wouldn't do that. But to give respect to his specially beloved children, Baba pulled Daddy as a sign of his love and regard. And you know, the whole scene was so beautiful. It was Daddyji's spontaneity, Daddy Gulzar's love and regard for Daddyji that she said yes, Baba's love and regard for his children, his specially beloved children, the daddies, that Baba also cooperated in that scene. And all of us, you know, the atmosphere was magical. It was almost like Bap Dada was there. And I thought to myself, you see, if I had missed that flag hoisting, I would have missed something that happened for the first time in the history of the yajna. Bhog being offered so spontaneously, and Baba being, message coming from Baba like that in those circumstances. And I thought, remember thinking to myself, wow, I witnessed something that was history. And so again, another argument for consistency. So when we say accumulating in my account of effort, it's not necessarily, you know, it's the little effort that I have to make to overcome what's going on in my mind. That's where I get my accumulation. And I made myself a rule once, which has been very, very helpful for my efforts. And that rule is, anytime you feel like saying no, make sure you say yes. And my most recent experience, I lived for almost 20 years, 19 years at the Global Retreat Center. And recently, about 18 months ago or so, I went to a new center in the UK to help out. Literally, I went just for 2 months, 2-3 months to help out. And after about a month, I think it was about a month, I don't remember, a month, 2 months, I suddenly get an email from Jenti Ben saying, would you consider staying there? And let me tell you something, I didn't want to be there. No, it wasn't that I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to leave the retreat center, which is different. I didn't mind being there, but I did not want to leave. And everything inside of me said, I don't want to leave the retreat center. I'm not going to say yes. I can't say yes. I'm going to say no. So I sent Manda Ben a text saying, in capital letters, I will not stay here. And she said to me, okay, don't panic, don't react, just we'll talk about it, we'll see what happens. But at the same time, everything inside me was saying to me, you needed to be here right now. And so, inside of me, I really didn't want to say yes. But my heart was telling me, right now, you need to be here, the need is here, there's hardly anybody here. Baba has filled you with so many different specialities that are needed to get this place on its feet. And you need to not think about yourself, and you need to just let go. And I kept thinking, no, but I've spent the last 19 years, my whole family is there. The retreat center is the heart of the yajna. All the seniors come there. This center that I had been sent to is it's remote, it's far away. It's like 4 hours from London. It's in the north of the country. All the action happens in the south. And I thought, I won't have access to the seniors in the same way. I won't have all the things. But I think deep down inside, I knew that the right thing to do would be to say yes. So I spoke to myself very sensibly, and I remember saying two things to myself. One is I said to myself, Baba has given you a lot, and now it's time to give the return rather than to keep taking. And the second very interesting thought that entered my mind was that when Daddy Janki was asked to come to the UK after Baba became avyakt, Daddy said to Baba, but what am I going to do in the UK? And she didn't want to leave the heart of the yajna. She didn't want to leave Bharat. She didn't want to leave, Madhuban. But she made such an enormous sacrifice, and she came to the UK. And she came to the West. And when she came to the West, and she saw that people really needed spirituality, she herself said, okay, I need to stay here and I need to serve these people. And to be able to stay in the UK in those days, for her to get a visa, she was not allowed to leave the country for 4 years. So from 1974 to 1978, Daddy didn't leave England. So she missed Bab Dada and Baba's Murlis and Madhuban for 4 full years. And at that time, there was no family in the UK, no Brahmins, or just a handful, no service. But she made that enormous sacrifice, and she stayed there. So I said to myself, she made that sacrifice for us, and she left all the way, such a distance between Bharat and England. She didn't go to Madhuban for 4 years. I'm just being asked to move 3 hours away. How can I say no? And then about a week after that, I had gone back to the retreat center for some program or something. And I went into the office, because when I had left a bit fast, and a few things I had left undone. So I went back to the office to finish those things off. And I remember, I still had this heavy heart. And I remember typing finishing off the document I was doing, and as I was typing, I had this really strange sensation that my fingers didn't fit the keyboard anymore. It's like, I don't know, it just I couldn't do it. It didn't fit. And this feeling inside me, really, really powerful thought, Suman, your part here is finished. Let go. And so in that moment, I said, okay, Baba, okay, drama, whatever, I surrender to your will. I will do what Baba wants me to do, and I will be where Baba and drama want me to be. And I made that decision, and then I came out, and I bumped into Mandaben, and she had just come back from Iceland. She had been there with Daddy on a conference. And she said to me, Suman, sit down. And there was a bench outside the reception. So the courtyard, we were sitting on this bench, and she said, I got your text, I spoke to Daddy about it, but actually I'd already made my decision inside just a few seconds earlier. And she looked really, really nervous, and she said to me, I spoke to Daddy, and Daddy said one line to me that I didn't know how to answer her, and I'm really sorry about it. So she's giving me this kind of spiel. And she said, Daddy said, Global House and Global Retreat Center now need to stop thinking about themselves. And for me, it was just a confirmation of what I had already been thinking. And, you know, the peace that I felt inside once I had made that decision. And I'm very glad that I made that decision before I bumped into Mandaben, because it's like I worked that out with me and Baba. And I think that actually when we talk about effort, this is what effort is. It's not about, effort is not, you know, the external things that we think we're doing, following the timetable, following the disciplines. Yes, that's part of it. But the effort that I need to make inside my own mind in practical situations to overcome something, to come to a conclusion, to come to a decision, that is effort. And that's where you accumulate your marks. And you don't accumulate just marks, you accumulate strength. And every time you make a right decision, you strengthen your ability to make right decisions in the future. And I can't tell you how much progress I have made in the last 18 months just because of this one thing of saying yes. Baba has shown the soul things that I didn't know that existed inside, the attainments that the soul has gathered over all the years became very, very apparent. And many, many gifts I could say I received just from this one single act of effort. And the third account, I'm running over time, so I'll just take a few minutes. The account of blessings. When is it that people give us blessings from their heart? I think blessings, definitely one thing that brings us blessings is selflessness. When I do something selflessly with not wanting anything for myself, anything, then people give us blessings. When a person is honest, then they become the recipient of blessings as well. It's not a big deal to make mistakes. But I should always be upfront about the mistakes I make. Then people will always give me blessings. I'm trying to think of an example, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head. You know, it's like if you don't want to do something, for example, if you don't feel like doing something, rather than make excuses about why you don't want to do it, it's better just to say, actually, I don't want to do this. But so many times we are so conditioned because Baba tells us, the classes tell us what we should and shouldn't do. So we have a clear idea of, you know, what is appropriate. And sometimes you don't feel like doing what's appropriate. And at that moment in time, often what happens is that we feel guilty that we're not in the mood or we don't feel like doing what's right. And so we start to make excuses. But actually, you know, it's better just to be plain. It's better to be plain and say, I know I should say yes, but I don't want to do this. And that's actually much more, that type of response and cleanliness and openness will bring you blessings. But trying to look good is one thing that is a disease of the whole world, I would say. We're so concerned about, one of the biggest concerns in the world, I would say, is reputation. Even in the BK world, is that we're scared about our reputation. We're scared about the impressions that we might create in people's hearts. Sometimes people ask us to do something and we don't want to say yes, but we say yes because we're scared that if we don't say yes this time, next time they won't give us the opportunity. Or we will look like we're uncooperative. So it comes back to this thing of doing things for the sake of my image. And when I say be honest, it's like, you know, be clear. Be clear about why you're doing what you're doing. Don't deceive yourself. Because there's a certain type of cleanliness. You know, there are certain people who say the right thing in the right way at the right time. They're so sweet, they're so gentle. But inside, you don't feel comfortable with those people, even though everything externally is right. Do you have that experience? And then there are some people whose behavior is, you know, they're loud and they're noisy and they're rowdy and they're a bit rough and a bit tough, but you still feel comfortable with them. Why? Because they're clean and they're not trying to be something. They're not inconsistent. They're the same inside and outside. And you feel such comfort with souls like that. You feel so safe with people like that who are not pretending. They're just as they are. And that type of honesty, that type of cleanliness will win you a lot of blessings. So selflessness, honesty. And the third thing, the hardest one I think, is humility. Humility will bring you a lot of blessings. But the blessings that come from humility, sometimes you have to wait for them. Because, yeah, you have to be the one that bows. you know, sometimes small things, but sometimes you work with somebody who doesn't know you, and they might be. I was in a situation recently where I was working with somebody who's, I don't know, 5 years in Gyan, and I've been around a lot longer than that. And this person was speaking to me as if I was new. Now, in instances like that, it's fuel for your ego. You know, everything inside you says, I want to say to them, excuse me, I know that, you don't need to tell me that. But at moments like that, if you can really swallow your pride and really practice, really go inside and remember the reality of being an incorporeal being. It has nothing to do with how long you've been around, how much experience you've had. None of that matters, it dissolves. And you can experience being incorporeal and egoless. In that second, actually the vibration that you emanate at that moment in time is a vibration that will bring you blessings from that other person without them even knowing why they're giving you blessings. So, Om Shanti. The three accounts. In brief. I think it could take another hour to go into detail, but that was just in brief. So we just finished with a few minutes of Baba's remembrance.